This show furnished by Coast Psychological Services.
How well do you understand your own psychology? Are you satisfied with your relationships? Curious about how you became who you are and why you react the way you do? Well, take a seat on the couch with Dr. Liana, a licensed clinical psychologist, and Margaret, a trained psychotherapist, is a show about the psychology and biology of our human existence. Combining psychological research, clinical expertise, and personal life experience, Dr. Liana and Margaret get you thinking about living consciously and making positive changes in your life. Now get ready for a dose of Dr. Radio. It's On the Couch with Dr. Liana and Margaret.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the sound of impending doom. And for some people, that's what living with anxiety can feel like all the time. Do you find that you anticipate the worst possible scenario? Despite rationally knowing that things are okay in the moment, does it still feel like something bad might happen and that you won't be able to cope? Are you up late at night worrying? Is it difficult to relax? If you are relating to any of this, you might be dealing with anxiety. And if that's the case, you want to stay tuned, because on this next hour of On the Couch with Dr. Liana and Margaret, we are going to be discussing everything you need to know about anxiety and how to overcome it. I'm Dr. Liana Jergulis, a licensed clinical psychologist, and Margaret Imhoff, sitting here next to me, is a trained psychotherapist. Margaret, when you were listening to that Jaws intro, what did you notice in your body?
Well, isn't it funny? Because we all, most of us know what that is. We recognize it. So I know it's from a movie, but there's that moment before I go, oh, it's just Jaws, that I start to feel anxious, even though it's just music and I know it's just playing in headphones. I'm like, something's happening. I don't know what it is. I need to be prepared, but I don't know for what.
You know, and that was such, like, me too. I hear that, and it's such a visceral, automatic, immediate response, and then all of the physical sensations that go along with anxiety start getting activated. The heart rate goes up. There's this tension in your body. There's kind of this feeling in your stomach, and it's important to point out how quickly and automatically, like, we're sitting here in the studio. There's no danger, like, at least not in this room right now. Jaws, we're not in the water. Jaws is not coming for us. Right? He's like, remember when you were a child and you'd go to the bathroom, and I don't know about you, but I'd be like, is Jaws going to be in the toilet? Or you're swimming in the swimming pool and like, is Jaws going to show up in the swimming pool?
Yeah, I would be scared in the swimming pool a lot. So the deep end, there might be a shark in there. As an adult, that seems so ridiculous, but as a kid, it really was terrifying. And if I start to think about it too much, even if I'm in a lake, it's like, what's under there? What is it?
Yes, and the anxiety starts. And that's exactly what anxiety is. It's always anticipatory in nature. And a lot of people don't understand the difference between anxiety versus fear. Fear is what happens if we are if Jaws is there lunging toward us.
So that's fear would be fear. Then if you're in the water and you see Jaws and you're terrified for your life, that's true fear.
That's true fear. But if you're on the beach, you know, on the pier on a lovely summer day, and you won't get in the water because Jaws might be close by, that's anticipatory in nature. That's expecting or predicting that something dangerous and something catastrophic is lurking, even though there's no real evidence that it's likely to happen.
So you'd be anxious about, you know, what's under the water or the unknown or that there is a shark down there versus terrified. You're not anxious when Jaws is attacking you. You're not going, I feel really anxious about this. I need to calm down and take some deep breaths. You're just trying to swim for your life.
You're just in this immediate, the body takes over. But this is what happens with anxiety. And for some people, you know, there's this heightened threat sensitivity or a false alarm that goes off in one's brain saying, danger is lurking. Be prepared. Something bad might happen. An unexpected, awful surprise. Something catastrophic. And for some people, this gets triggered just like your, you know, smoke alarm would when you're trying to cook a meal at night and there's no real fire, but the alarm is going off anyway.
Okay. That's an interesting way to think of it. The alarm is going off. But so everyone feels anxiety There's no, there's no one that gets to escape that unpleasant feeling. But anxiety does have a purpose, right?
Absolutely has a purpose, and we need it. If you were walking through the jungle and you saw some eyes, you know.
God, today's freaking me out. I'm imagining walking through the jungle.
I know, are you feeling anxious?
Their eyes
right
watching.
Now? I know, yeah. Right? Well, no, think about it. You're walking through the jungle and you hear this sound or you see something move, right?
Mm-hmm.
Your brain's going to immediately go up. Be on alert. Be prepared. Danger is close. And our body immediately goes into the survival mode of trying to protect ourselves. So our heart rate goes up so that we can pump, blood through our body quickly to our vital organs. Our respiration rate goes up so we can breathe faster and get more oxygen to our lungs. Muscles tense so that we can fight or we can get away. And then if that, beast from behind the trees comes toward you, you're ready. And this is a great system. It's what has advanced us as species. It helps us detect when danger is close by. But what happens when this system is going off? What happens when it's 11 o'clock at night and you're trying to go to bed and everything's fine and your body is still responding as though at any given moment in time this, animal's going to come lunge toward you?
It's so hard now because the threats we face are so different. And like you said, I think most of us, if we're walking through the jungle and we hear a twig snap, we are going to go, holy crap, what was that?
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is we're not walking through the jungle. And I think in a way that's easier because then we know our anxiety is legitimate and it is helping us and we should be anxious because we don't want to die because we're being attacked in the jungle.
Yes.
But what, when you're lying in bed in the middle of the night worrying about your mortgage, there's nothing you can really do about that to immediately relieve the stress because it's the same feeling, I think, as a tiger is about to pounce on you or is stalking you in the bushes, but it's not the same scenario, so we can't deal with it in the same way.
That's true. So at what point is anxiety truly protective and natural and normal, something that we need to be safe? And at what point does it start to become harmful? And this is what we do a lot of work with in therapy, right?
Mm-hmm.
We help people learn to recognize when their anxiety is becoming really problematic for them in their lives.
That seems like it's a hard distinction for us to make. I mean, we often talk about how technology has evolved so much faster than we've had the ability to evolve as human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And, with anxiety, it's like our bodies are still in the jungle in a lot of ways, but we're not being chased by tigers. We have, bills or we have to move or get a job or
health problems.
Yeah.
Or, the mole on my arm. Is that cancer or is that just a mole on my arm?
Yeah.
And learning how to really wisely discern whether a situation is truly likely to be threatening or dangerous,
mm-hmm,
is a really key step in overcoming anxiety. So if I'm able to pay enough attention to when I start to feel anxious and worry,
mm-hmm,
and able to quickly assess whether that's a worry that I need to direct time and attention and energy towards, or whether that's my mind just trying to help me plan, prepare, predict, and problem solve, and this alarm is going off, becomes critical in knowing how to reduce the anxious response.
Well, I think that helps a lot, too, because there are legitimate things to worry about. We worry about our family members. We worry about our health. Like you said, we worry about our kids. We worry about all sorts of things, and that's legitimate. But there's so much we can cut away that's unnecessary.
So much.
Yeah.
And for those of you who just tuned in, you're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Leanna and Margaret. This is a show about understanding your own psychology. And we're talking all about anxiety. When is it helpful and when is it harmful? When I was in graduate school, we would talk about anxiety. And of course, you'd have all of these grad students. We were getting ready to prepare our doctoral dissertations. And we have to go in front of a committee of people and defend our position and discuss our research. And, you have these, what felt like a panel of judges. And I remember,
it
feels that way.
Yeah.
And we had, a panel of judges, and that's anxiety provoking, right?
Yeah.
And my professors used to say to us in class, some anxiety is helpful. It gives you energy. It gives you the motivation to go, to tackle problems, to face the day. It helps with preparation. Mm-hmm. So a little bit can be helpful to us. And yeah. at a certain point, it absolutely becomes a hindrance.
It does. That reminds me of, I took a communication class, and there's a term, communication apprehension, which is a fancy way of saying nervous about public speaking.
So that's it was a really
funny.
Fancy way.
Yeah. So it was really funny because we're all these communication students sitting around the table, and we had to do some big presentations. And one of someone in the class raised their hand and asked the professor, "What do we do about, you know, if we're experiencing a lot of communication apprehension?" And he was like, went on this huge rant. He's like, "That's good because that just means you're alive."
Yeah.
He's like, "If you're standing up there about to talk in front of 200 people and you feel relaxed, it's gonna be boring. That's not normal. You shouldn't feel relaxed if you're gonna talk to 200 people.
Yes,
you
right.
should be ramped up so you can be entertaining and awake. So next time you feel some communication apprehension, just remember it means you're alive." So that's how I try to think of it. But then, you know, that's there's a normal level of that. But of course, if you're so anxious you can't speak or you pass out, that's a different level.
That's a different level. And that's when we need to begin to assess whether it's problematic for us or not. So to answer that question, when people's anxiety helps them make positive steps forward and keeps them feeling good and motivated and productive, it's probably helpful. And once you complete that task and once you get through what you need to and it kind of dissipates, you're in a good place with anxiety. But when that anxiety starts impacting the decisions you make in life and gets in the way of being able to rest and relax and let go of thoughts and really limits taking risks and taking on new challenges is when it starts to become harmful. And a lot of people feel tremendous distress because of their anxiety. So anxiety can create more anxiety because then people start feeling anxious about having anxiety in the first place and how it's impacting their lives. So for those of you listening, if you relate to any of this and you want to know more about what you can do to overcome your own anxiety, stay tuned. We're going to be talking about that on this next hour of On the Couch.
Hey, is that a faucet running?
Nope, that's not a faucet. That's a river rushing through the forest.
It is?
Yeah, forest rivers provide over 100 million people with clean water to drink. The water comes straight from the forest to us, in fact.
What? I can't hear you because of the vacuum.
That's not a vacuum. That's the trees in the forest cleaning up the air we breathe.
How do trees clean the air?
They soak up the dirty air on their leaves, branches, and trunks. Which means clean air for us.
Cool. I didn't know that.
Yep. But the forest does more than give us clean air and water. It gives us shade for hot days, birds to listen to, and trees to climb.
Wow. That's awesome. I didn't know how cool the forest could be. Hey, let's go explore some more.
Visit the forest today and enjoy all it does, just for you. To learn more about the forest and find one near you, go to discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Where do you get the best soul food in town? I mean the best. I mean licking your plate clean, licking your fingers off. It's Doolin's on Crenshaw. Doolin's on Crenshaw, just south of Stocker. This is exquisite. This is Southern cooking at its very best. Southern cooking is the essence of home cooking. It's the essence of comfort food. It's the essence of patting your tummy and going, that was good, especially when you eat the mouth-watering fried chicken. Their fried chicken is something to dream about. It is just perfect. The skin, the crust, the spices, the herbs. God, it's good. The chicken inside is so moist. It's wonderful. Try the oxtails, the short ribs, the macaroni and cheese. It's for all your catering needs, for all your dining needs. They have their own catering hall. They will come to your house and set everything up. They will feed you so well. This is food you dream about. Doolin's on Crenshaw. And by the way, excellent customer service. The people at the counter are the best. At Doolin's on Crenshaw, just south of Stocker.
790 KABC.
Well, Welcome back to On the Couch with Dr. Leanna and Margaret. And if you've been listening, those sounds, the sounds of people walking to a door and there's something behind that door. And what is it? You don't know. It's the uncertainty. That's what causes people anxiety. For those of you who are just turning in, you're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Leanna and Margaret. I am a licensed clinical psychologist, and Margaret Imhoff is a trained psychotherapist. Talking today to you all about anxiety. It's a normal response. It's an emotional, a behavioral, and a mental response. We've had this mechanism for thousands and thousands of years to help protect us against future consequences and potential for catastrophic outcomes. But at a certain point, this anxious response is no longer helpful to us in our lives, and it's a hindrance. And despite knowing that it's a hindrance, sometimes it's really, really difficult to turn our minds off. So we're talking about how we can do this. And when anxiety starts to become problematic, it gets in the way of being able to go about life and take on day-to-day responsibilities and take risks and enter into new social situations. And people then can start to get depressed or feel very sad or down about themselves because they recognize that they're not living their lives in a way that's most meaningful to them.
Yeah, I'm still stuck on the footsteps. I'm still wondering who it is creeping up behind us.
Yes, it's scary, right? And the thing, and the truth of the matter is, and this is where anxiety is all about anticipation. What could happen, which is very different than fear, which is more of a, I'm experiencing something dangerous in this moment. Yeah. Anxiety is the what ifs.
Well, I'm sorry, and also, but it makes sense too, because if you hear footsteps behind you, you want to turn around and see who it is. If it's your you know, spouse or your friend or your parent, you're like, okay, it's cool, I'll just continue watching TV. But if it's a stranger in your house, you need to jump up and do something.
You need to be prepared. You need to be in fight or flight response, and that's a healthy response. But sometimes there's no threat present.
Like sometimes there are no footsteps and you're just watching TV.
Well, that's exactly right. And sometimes people mistake uncertainty for catastrophe. Mm-hmm. So what do I mean by that? Well, not knowing what's behind that door is not necessarily a bad thing. Somebody with anxiety might say, there's something terrifying behind that door. What is it? It's a monster. It's Bloody Mary. Yeah. I'm laughing because I tend to talk about my Bloody Mary story when I was 8 years old.
Whenever
and afraid
up,
to
we talk
in, talk
about Bloody Mary.
Bloody Mary takes me back to my childhood. If I say Bloody Mary 10 times in the mirror, oh no, the dead witch might come out and stab me and then I'm going to die.
It's an urban legend. For everyone that doesn't know, Bloody Mary is a very powerful urban legend.
It really terrified me as a child. But it's about not knowing. And so people who really struggle with anxiety have a very difficult time with uncertainty. So I might tell a patient, it's very, very unlikely that you are going to have a heart attack because you're 25 years old and you've had a couple of EKGs mm-hmm. and your doctor and several other people have told you that you are not at risk.
I'm laughing because I'm like, are you talking about me? Because when I was 25, I had really bad anxiety and I always thought I was having a heart attack. And heart disease runs in my family big time. So that was probably part of it. But I had a million, like I had like the 3D heart echocardiogram or whatever it was. And they're like, your heart's fine.
Your heart's okay.
And then I thought it didn't work. I was like, well, my heart wasn't doing the thing. Which, for the record, my heart does beat an extra time once in a while.
Okay, so you were just
but
really
apparently it's a good thing. Apparently it's a good thing because it's pushing the extra blood out. It's not skipping a beat, so it's totally fine.
I'm glad to hear that.
But so I went and I got like two of those giant McDonald's venti coffees, or I'm sorry, we're not Starbucks, large, extra large coffees. And I drank them directly before the heart test because I was like, okay, this time it's going to do the thing and mm-hmm. they'll see it on the test. And I couldn't even lie on the table because I was so cracked out from the coffee.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, how much longer is this going to be?
Yes. Anyway. That sounds awful. That does not sound like a pleasant experience.
And you were kind to me. Well, I think the first time I met you, I was having anxiety and I was sitting next to you and you said to me, Are you feeling a little anxious? We're at this restaurant in Joshua Tree. I didn't really know you. And I was like, just having like a Jack Daniels or something, trying to calm down.
Yeah.
Like, yes, I am. And you're like, well, I work with a lot of people with anxiety. And I was like, this is the best day ever. I'm feeling really anxious. And I'm just so happened to be sitting next to a psychologist who specializes in anxiety.
It worked out really well. Yeah. And it made me feel good about myself.
Oh,
because
good.
I felt really helpful to you,
you were really helpful in that moment.
And look, here we are now, all these years later, talking about how to overcome anxiety.
And that's the thing. So I know you helped me when I was 25. I'm curious, in your practice, you know, there are a lot of, I know it makes me anxious, but what are the common themes that you see that really trigger people feeling anxious?
Sure. So again, as we move forward, we're talking about pathological anxiety. We're talking about anxiety that's distressing, that's unhelpful, and that is not rational in response to the level of risk associated with a specific situation. So it's one thing if there's a high probability for risk. If I jump mm-hmm. out of an airplane, I'm going to feel really anxious, and rightfully so, because mm-hmm. there's a high likelihood that something bad might happen. But if I'm 25 years old yeah. and perfectly healthy, my stomach ache is probably not a sign of cancer, right?
Yeah.
Stomach cancer. So moving forward, we're talking about these irrational thoughts, and sometimes they're based in a little rationality, right? I might walk into a social situation and I want everybody to like me or think that I'm nice. I want to have a pleasant time, and I might feel a little bit of anxiety, but that doesn't mean that that situation is dangerous or threatening. And if someone doesn't like me, it's not catastrophic.
Mm-hmm.
So to answer your question, I see people's anxiety manifest in a few different key areas. Let's start with socializing or social
okay.
situations. This creates a lot of anxiety for people. Anxiety about approval or disapproval, about possibility of conflict. People worry a lot about negative evaluation from people who might be seen as intimidating in some way or superior in some way.
So is that like when you're at a party and you want people to like you? Is my dress okay sort of thing? Or maybe on a date, you know, do I seem smart? Am I funny? Am I attractive? You know, I'm really nervous. Maybe I just won't go on this date because I have a pimple and I'll be rejected.
Any and all of those situations, and every person has their own unique of triggering situations. So for some people, it might be talking to in front of a group of people that they work with at a meeting. For
mm-hmm.
other people, it might be going on that first date. For someone else, it might be being assertive with the mechanic at the auto shop for charging more than they said that they were going to charge.
Mm-hmm.
For some people, it might be making a new friend. So there's a lot of different ways this can manifest. People who have more anxiety in social situations typically have a history of being around people in their lives who are critical, who are rejecting, who are judgmental, maybe a history of some teasing, a history of bullying,
mm-hmm.
and that kind of becomes imprinted on in their brain. So there's this constant worry every time there's a new social situation about whether they're going to be rejected or humiliated or embarrassed or look foolish in some way.
Because something's happened in the past probably that has made them feel that way. I'm trying to think, yeah, my friends, most of them who I can think back, say that they were bullied when they were younger are the ones who oftentimes at a party, they're, you know, think people are talking badly about them or didn't like them. And a lot of times that's not accurate.
Well, that's not accurate. And in the next segment, as we talk more about tips that people can utilize to manage their anxiety,
mm-hmm.
we're going to discuss in more detail how to challenge these thoughts, because, you know, we have over 100,000 thoughts a day, and most of them are just nonsense. And most of them are just completely inaccurate. And the number one kind of cognitive distortion or unhelpful, illogical sort of thought process that we use that creates anxiety are negative predictions about the future.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking that we know what's going to happen and it's going to be bad. And actually, not only is it going to be bad, it's going to be catastrophic. And not only is it going to be catastrophic, but we're not going to be able to cope with it.
Well, and why do we do that? Why do we predict negative things? Even when I've had positive experiences, sometimes I predict negative things. And I feel, I don't know if this is true for everyone, but I feel like it gives me a sense of control. Well, if this goes horribly, then I know, you know, I'll be prepared for that on some level. But are there other things going on, or is that the common reason?
That is what it's all about. You got it right there. Our thought processes, and if we think about the capacity for human thinking, we know that it evolved over 50,000 years ago, and the capacity to think was really about learning to plan, problem solve, prepare, and predict. Mm-hmm. And the ability to do that has advanced, you know, has advanced us as a species, but it's also given man the idea that killing himself or herself is a good idea. So we overuse this mechanism, and there's a point at which it becomes a hindrance. So getting out of our heads is a really important step in overcoming anxiety. You've been listening to On the Couch with Dr. Leanna and Margaret. We're here talking to you about your psychology and how you can overcome anxiety. Stay tuned when we come back. More tips for learning how to overcome this stuff.
Where do you get the best soul food in town? I mean the best. I mean licking your plate clean, licking your fingers off. It's Doolin's on Crenshaw. Doolin's on Crenshaw, just south of Stocker. This is exquisite. This is Southern cooking at its very best. Southern cooking is the essence of home cooking. It's the essence of comfort food. Their fried chicken is something to dream about. Try the oxtails, the short ribs, the macaroni and cheese. It's for all your catering needs, for all your dining needs. Doolin's on Crenshaw, just south of Stocker.
Having problems sleeping? I can solve that. I'm Dr. Nazarian, the Beverly Hills dentist. Wait, you ask, how can a dentist help me sleep better? My answer? By fixing that toothache that keeps you up all night. I also provide all the dental services your family may need. My number is 310-277-8232. So if you want to get a good night's sleep along with a great smile, give me a call. 310-277-8232. Also at thebeverlyhillsdentist.com. Pleasant dreams.
Whether you want breakfast for dinner or dinner for lunch, get any meal anytime at Norm's.
Our bigger, better breakfast is only $6.79. Hickory smoked bacon, link sausage, ham, eggs, hash browns, and buttermilk hotcakes served 24/7.
Or get your feast on with Norm's New York Steak and Shrimp Dinner served all day and night. Hand-cut steak, golden fried shrimp, vegetable, potato, soup, and salad, all for $11.99. Come into Norm's restaurants and eat what you want, when you want. Open 24/7. NormsRestaurants.com.
Cars, trucks, motorcycles. If it's got a motor, we've got your man. If there was ever a time you needed an automotive expert like Leon Kaplan at your side, it's now. The Motor Man. Sunday mornings at 8 on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
And welcome back to On the Couch with Dr. Leanna and Margaret. This is a show about understanding your own psychology. And tonight, we've been discussing anxiety, that response, that automatic fight or flight response that has evolved over hundreds and thousands of years to protect us. But it's helpful at a certain point. Then it becomes distressing and gets in the way of us being able to live our lives in the most meaningful and fulfilling ways. We've been talking to you about some of the themes that I typically see working with patients that trigger people's anxiety and worry. Social situations, very common. The fear of disapproval or negative evaluation. Other common themes that typically trigger people's worry or anxiety are fears of failing, of inadequacy, performance situations. People worry that they're not going to be good enough, or they're going to fail miserably and their lives aren't going to be okay, or as a result, other people will abandon them because they'll see that they're inadequate in some way or incompetent in some way.
So these can really be connected to other things. Like when I hear you saying that, I think about the imposter syndrome and people worrying about being found out or being found, like having people find out that they're actually defective in some way or not that, you know, they're not perfect. So anxiety can be about pretty much anything that we don't feel confident about in our lives.
Or completely in control with, or when there's uncertainty, the imposter syndrome comes up a lot. Mm-hmm. So many people come in and they have good careers and they're accomplished, they're successful. And sometimes people might just be getting started on their journeys and there's still a sense of somehow I'm fake, or people will see that I'm not who they think I am. And that creates a tremendous amount of anxiety.
Yeah.
Right. I remember when I first completed my doctorate and all of a sudden I had this title doctor and people started calling me doctor, and it was like, oh no, there's this pressure now. I'm supposed to know all of these things. So that does, it leads to a lot of anxiety. People also tend to worry about relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Am I going to be abandoned? Does my partner love me? Are my emotional needs going to be met?
Well, you could even worry, you know, where are they right now? What are they doing? Who are they talking to? They have a cute coworker. I saw them eating lunch. What does it mean? Are they going to leave me? I mean, it can be so many things. Like, gain 10 pounds. Maybe they'll, I mean.
He didn't call me back in 10 minutes. I haven't heard from him or her in 3 days. What are they doing? Who are they with? What if my partner cheats on me or leaves me?
Mm-hmm.
Relationships bring up a lot of anxiety for
people. What if they're still there when I get home? No, I'm just kidding.
What if they don't leave me and I'm stuck with this person for the rest of my life? Oh no, I just got married. What did I do? Right? Themes for women around having families or having children, or about giving up work or trying to become a full-time mother, or how we navigate that. We can really, really worry about anything. Health, like I said earlier, you know, is this mole on my arm cancer? What if it is? Finances, am I going to have enough to cover my bills? What's going to happen in 2 years? Work, safety, car accidents, terrorist attacks, safety of loved ones. We really conceivably can worry about anything and feel anxious about anything that is important to us.
Mm-hmm.
So it all goes back to the few basic mechanisms that we tend to worry when we're anticipating or thinking about the future. We tend to worry when things are outside of our control, and we tend to worry when we don't have absolute certainty with things in life, which is actually pretty much never. We don't ever really have absolute certainty about anything.
But we have the illusion of it. Isn't that enough?
No. It is, and it's illusion. I mean, really, Margaret, can you think of anything in life that you have absolute certainty over?
No, absolutely nothing. But most of the time, I do have some illusion of feeling like there's a system, and I'm in control, and then I know what I'm doing, and it's going to be okay because I've thought about it and made a plan. But yeah, it's completely, you know, something could happen in an instant that just all of that is rendered completely irrelevant for the rest of my life.
That's exactly right. And, you know, as we're sitting here right now, you have, you know, you have a lovely mother, let's say. I've met her before, Allison. Mm-hmm. And when you, you know, last spoke with your mom, you felt confident, your mom's happy, your mom's healthy. But as you sit here right now and as we do this radio show, you don't know with 100% certainty whether Allison's okay or not, and I'm not trying to make
Thanks,
you
Leanna.
Nervous here, trying to make a point. You don't really know.
No, I don't. And it's funny you say that, because it is something I tend to be anxious about. I got her one of those life alert things
that
I make her wear.
Behavior.
I make her wear this necklace thing so that if something happens, even in the shower, I got her the waterproof one because I'm so neurotic. She can press a button if she falls in the shower or something, and paramedics will come to our house.
That was a nice safety precaution.
So it makes me feel like then I have control. I mean, to be honest, if my mom has another stroke and just drops dead, not to be too morbid, she's not gonna, that little device button thing's not gonna be very helpful. But it makes me feel like, oh,
it makes you feel like you are somewhat more in control. But I do want to say something about that, because there is a difference between worry versus problem solving. So sometimes we do have greater probabilities of things happening. Your mom had a stroke. There is a probability that she'll have another stroke. Maybe not a strong probability, but it's something to think about. So in that instance, planning and problem solving and being prepared is effective. It's an effective use of your mental energy.
It is. But that at the same time, I still worry about it.
Well, and that's the key piece.
Yeah.
So we have to begin to discern again whether there is an actual problem that's either happening right now at this moment in time, or if there's a problem that's very likely to happen. And if that is the case, we do want to problem solve.
Well, and it becomes almost I want to get to the problem solving part, but at least I think about it now as a probability issue.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is the probability? Anything's possible, but is it probable?
That's exactly
it. If it's not probable, I probably shouldn't worry about it.
That's right. You want to let it go if it's mm-hmm. not probable. And so these are the things that I help my clients with. So, for instance, if something is very probable, you want to get into action. You want to sit down. You want to take 20 or 30 minutes with a pen and a paper, and you want to really define what the problem is and generate various solutions creatively.
And this is what you were talking about earlier with the problem-solving function of anxiety.
Yes. That's exactly right. But if you think about worry, that's not what we do with worry.
No, you're just running around going, oh, God, I'm so worried, I'm so worried, I'm so worried. You're not sitting down and solving a problem and making anything better.
Have you ever just walked around with worry for like 3 or 4 hours? Does it typically help you feel any more prepared?
No, it makes me feel exhausted.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So worry, which is a key mechanism that mm-hmm. creates anxiety, right? Because a lot of our anxiety starts with thoughts or these negative predictions. Or these catastrophic, like, what-if scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
Worry is something that we really need to work on letting go of to manage our anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to know how to do that. But for most people, that worry starts to become excessive. It robs them of being in the present moment. And it's very, very inefficient. We don't walk away with any more information. The problem is people use this as a coping strategy.
Yeah, that is interesting. So you're not taking action when you're worried. You're not doing something that actually make you feel less worried in the future. You're just worrying.
Well,
but what is the coping mechanism of worry?
Well, so the coping mechanism is everything we've been talking about. If I worry about this enough,
mm-hmm.
then it's going to somehow give me a sense of control and help me feel like I'm more prepared from bad, unexpected surprises happening.
Mm-hmm.
So somehow just sitting here for 4 hours going over and over is somehow going to make everything okay or make me solve some sort of problem. And then I won't have this sort of bad, catastrophic outcome that I'm not able to cope with.
So by making myself miserable now, I'll already be miserable when the miserable thing happens.
That is the rational way of thinking about it. But in the moment, for the person who's worrying, it makes them feel safe.
And if the miserable thing never happens, then you've just made yourself miserable. There was a woman, I cannot remember her name. My mom actually told me this quote. And she was this interesting, eccentric lady. And she lived to be really old. And at the end of her life, she said, my life was just full of tragedy. And she said, but most of them never happened. My life was
Perfect.
Full of tragedies,
I love
but
that.
Most of them never
yes,
happened.
Yes, no, I love that.
Yeah.
That's it. What if this? What if that?
Mm-hmm.
So I call worry the what-if syndrome. And we
yeah.
can be here, you know, till we're blue in the face coming up with all of the what-ifs. And this is why we often talk about staying in the present moment and really, really navigating this moment in time. And it takes a lot of work and practice to be able to train the brain to be able to do that. Because left to its own device, the brain takes us to the future and the what if. And learning how to disengage from these worries and thoughts that don't serve us well and recognize what we do need to think through in an effective and efficient way and what we need to disengage from is critical. So don't go away, because when we come back, we're going to be teaching you more specifically how you can do this so that you feel less anxious and enjoy your life more. You've been listening to On the Couch with Dr. Leanna and Margaret. Stay tuned.
I'm good, but I have a story and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I still have nightmares.
I'm really not so good, but are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
Having problems sleeping? I can solve that. I'm Dr. Nazarian, the Beverly Hills dentist. Wait, you ask, how can a dentist help me sleep better? My answer? By fixing that toothache that keeps you up all night. I also provide all the dental services your family may need. My number is 310-277-8232. So if you want to get a good night's sleep along with a great smile, give me a call. 310-277-8232. Also at TheBeverlyHillsDentist.com. Pleasant dreams.
Where do you get the best soul food in town? I mean the best. I mean licking your plate clean, licking your fingers off. It's Doolin's on Crenshaw. Doolin's on Crenshaw, just south of Stocker. This is exquisite. This is Southern cooking at its very best. Southern cooking is the essence of home cooking. It's the essence of comfort food. It's the essence of patting your tummy and going, that was good, especially when you eat the mouth-watering fried chicken. Their fried chicken is something to dream about. It is just perfect. The skin, the crust, the spices, the herbs. God, it's good. The chicken inside is so moist. It's wonderful. Try the oxtails, the short ribs, the macaroni and cheese. It's for all your catering needs, for all your dining needs. They have their own catering hall. They will come to your house and set everything up. They will feed you so well. This is food you dream about. Doolin's on Crenshaw. And by the way, excellent customer service. The people at the counter are the best at Doolin's on Crenshaw, just south of Stocker.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow. And like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep REM sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry MyPillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever. You can buy one of my pillows and get one absolutely free.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-324-0629 and use promo code KABC. That's 800-324-0629. Or go to MyPillow.com and use the promo code KABC.
Cars, trucks, motorcycles. If it's got a motor, we've got your man. If there was ever a time you needed an automotive expert like Leon Kaplan at your side, it's now. The Motor Man. Sunday mornings at 8 on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
And welcome back to On the Couch. I'm Dr. Leanna Dragoulis, a licensed clinical psychologist, here with Margaret Imhoff, a trained psychotherapist. This is a show about psychology, and we have been talking about anxiety in this hour. What is anxiety? Why do we have it? And what can you do about it? There's a point at which anxiety is helpful when it motivates us and gives us energy and helps us complete tasks and takes care of things, but there's a point at which it becomes harmful, distressing, and begins to hinder our lives. So for those of you who recognize anxiety might be something that you're struggling with, we want you to listen up because we're going to be helping you learn what you can do to overcome irrational and excessive anxiety.
Yeah, and I just want to say, I think it's something people are really struggling with now, even with the political climate. People are so unsure of what's going to happen, what our lives are going to look like, what's going to happen with insurance, what's going to happen with our country. So it's just kind of a crazy time. So I know that's another, we've talked about doing a show on that at some point too.
Yes.
But it is normal, I think, to be at least thinking about anxiety, and a good thing to be learning how to cope with it at this point in time. And Leanna, as you know, I've been a fan of your work with anxiety since the age of 25. And I'm curious, I know you see a lot of different cases and different types of anxiety. And what are the tools you kind of give people, or how do you help people deal with their anxiety when they bring that to your door?
Sure. So there's a lot involved in treating anxiety. And what I tell people is it's not much different than learning a new language or learning how to play a musical instrument. Mm-hmm. It takes practice. It takes focus. It takes commitment and making some very clear and concrete changes. Right. It's, you know, a lot of people with anxiety, their spouses will say things like, well, just relax.
Oh, isn't that the worst when you're feeling stressed out? Well, just calm down.
Yeah, calm down. Well, if you worry about it, it's just going to make it worse. And then people worry, start worrying about the fact that they can't stop worrying about
horrible.
It. I have irritable bowel syndrome and they told me that anxiety makes it worse, but I can't stop feeling anxious and oh no, it's going to get worse. Mm-hmm. So anxiety can create more anxiety very easily. Look, some people are born into the world with a genetic or a biological component, and this fight or flight response just gets activated very easily.
Or it can be a hyperactive thyroid. If you are experiencing extreme anxiety or physical symptoms, you do want to go to the doctor and make sure there's not a medical issue happening.
Absolutely. And thank you for saying that. Just once.
Yeah. Don't keep going
because
back.
People with something like obsessive compulsive disorder, which is related to an anxiety disorder or panic disorder, any of this anxiety creates anxious behaviors, which I'm going to talk about in a moment. And those anxious behaviors can reinforce that anxiety and make it worse. And a lot of people don't understand that. And unbeknownst to them are doing things that they think are helpful and helping them navigate this anxiety. But over the long run, unfortunately, is making the anxiety worse. And they don't teach you this stuff in school. Yeah. So by the time people are coming to see me, they're not understanding what's happening, right? It might have started as kind of more manageable anxiety, but through different anxious behaviors such as avoidance or checking or reassurance seeking or people pleasing or procrastination.
I'm anxious, people won't like me, so now I'm people pleasing and trying to get people to like me more and becoming more anxious.
That's exactly right. Or they're worrying more to try to help them feel less anxious because they think they're doing something that's going to protect them. But the more we worry, the more anxious we become. And people are really reluctant to give up this worry because they've used it as a strategy for many years. So for some people, they just have more sensitive systems. That false alarm, be on alert, be prepared, something dangerous is going to happen, just gets activated a little bit more easily.
Like some people are just more high-strung than others. Some people are just by nature more relaxed people.
I think that's true. And there seems to be, you know, our central nervous systems and our biology, and that plays a role. For other people, their life experiences has cultivated and created anxiety. So if growing up, if I'm in a war-torn country and every time I go outside, there's a bombing, or if I live in a house with a stepfather who's an alcoholic and gets drunk and beats me, my fight or flight response is getting activated constantly, and I'm learning at a very young age that these really bad, dangerous, catastrophic things are very likely to happen. Mm-hmm. And for some kids, that is indeed the case. But the problem is, once you're out of that situation and those things are no longer present, the brain and the body are still responding as though threat is around every single corner.
So someone's snide comment at work might activate your system in the way of, oh my gosh, this person's going to physically harm me.
That's right. It's really a mix of nature and nurture. And for those who already have a biological predisposition plus traumatic, unexpected, chaotic, dramatic childhoods, it becomes really, really intense. So couple of things. The first thing is recognizing that anxiety has three components to it. It has the physical component, which is some of the things we've been talking about, the heart rate, your pounding chest, maybe struggles with some discomfort in the stomach.
It can be so many things.
Headaches,
for different
dizziness,
people.
Nausea, chills, sweats. Mm-hmm. There's a very strong component physically to anxiety, but there's also the mental component, which we've been talking about, which are all of these thoughts. What if this happens? What if I go bankrupt? What if my business fails? What if my partner leaves me? What if my child starts using drugs?
Sick? Yeah.
all of these things. What if this mole is cancer, right? So there's the mental component, which involves a lot of negative predictions about the future, catastrophes, worrying. And then lastly, there's the behavioral component, which we just talked about, mm-hmm. which are anxious behaviors. So if I'm anticipating a situation to be very threatening and very dangerous, and I start feeling anxious about it, what I'm likely going to do is engage in certain behaviors as a way to immediately alleviate my anxiety. Mm-hmm. But those behaviors, as we said, are going to make me more anxious over the long run.
Okay.
So what we do in therapy is we help people first learn to recognize their triggers. When someone is feeling anxious, I have them write down what the triggering situation was, what types of thoughts they were engaging in as they started to feel anxious, mm-hmm. what types of physical sensations they noted in their body, and then what behaviors are they really tempted to engage in to try and alleviate that anxiety. Or what behaviors do they end up engaging in?
So even for as simple as a social situation, let's say someone that you're anxious about going to, you get nervous at parties when meeting new people. Let's say you're not the most extroverted person in the world. So if you go to a party and you're feeling anxious, maybe your coping mechanism is you might be drinking too much at the party.
That's exactly right. Okay. And it provides immediate relief. But afterward, the next day, and
you're
a
going,
lot of people...
Oh no, what did I yes, say last night?
Yes. And there's this thing called post-event rumination for social anxiety, which is going over and over and doing a screen, you know, a minute-by-minute play of everything you said or did that might have made you look foolish. And people might spend days.
Really? I've never done that. Yeah.
Margaret, you are a perfect example of how people can overcome and work through anxiety. It just takes focus, and it's possible. So we have to address, first, we have to understand what these situations are and begin to recognize these patterns of thinking, of behaving, and these physical sensations. And then what we do is we learn how to navigate each one of these different areas. So when we work with the cognitive or the mental component, the worries, the catastrophes, the what ifs, we work on changing thoughts to be more accurate, to be more balanced, to be less catastrophic, to be more helpful.
So that might not be, oh, everyone at the party hated me, but it could be, oh, you know, I met some people I liked at that party. Maybe not everyone, but I had a few good conversations versus it was just a terrible disaster.
That's exactly right. Or as I'm walking into the party, instead of no one's going to like me, I'm going to be look so foolish and awkward. I'm going to have no one to talk to and I won't be able to cope. You might instead say, it's probably going to be just fine. I'm probably making this to be worse than it is. I'm sure I'll have some decent conversations, mm-hmm. and there's nothing that I'm doing that is likely to elicit such fierce disapproval from people.
Yeah, and then you can be aware that your anxiety is there, too. I think that helps keep a more realistic viewpoint. I know I have this anxiety in these situations, and, you know, it's probably, everything's probably fine. That's just my anxiety talking.
And that is the next piece and a very, very important one, because the more we try to stop and immediately control or get rid of our anxiety, the worse it becomes. Mm-hmm. So we don't want to try to stop or control our anxiety. We want to begin to accept it, to tolerate it, to acknowledge that it's there, that this false alarm is getting triggered, and then know what to do to intervene by changing our thoughts and making them more helpful and balanced instead of catastrophizing one outcome, saying it is one possibility that this mole on my arm is cancer, but it's also possible that it's just a mole, and it's also likely that the doctor is going to be able to treat it.
Mm-hmm. And then to take action, make the appointment to see the doctor, and I'm going to be seeing the doctor next week, and there's nothing I can do until then, and I'll make a plan of action when I see him or
That's
her.
Exactly right. And also learning how to quiet the mind and disengage from these thoughts, and this is where a mindfulness practice is huge, mm-hmm. and one of the most effective ways, learning how to recognize the thoughts that trap you and learning how to let them go. And we also do a lot of work with relaxation training. That's a very helpful component of learning how to manage anxiety, deep breathing, progressive muscle relaxation, visualization. That takes practice and focus over weeks to get better at being able to do it. And lastly, we shift around the behaviors, the avoidance behaviors, the procrastination, and we work on facing the situations that make us uncomfortable. And the more and more we do that, we can then have this new data or this new evidence that what we predict is going to happen is very unlikely to happen.
Getting perspective.
That's exactly right. So it takes work, it takes focus, it takes commitment, but it can be done. We can learn to relax. And I hope that some of the people listening try some of these strategies. They work. We have research that supports that. You've been listening to On the Couch with Dr. Leanna and Margaret. We're here with you every Friday night at midnight, talking to you about your psychology and helping you understand it better. To be part of our show or join our online community, please see us at facebook.com/onthecouchnow. And if you have anything you'd like to hear about on our show, please let us know. We'll see you next time. You've been listening to 790 KABC Talk Radio.
This show furnished by Coast Psychological Services.
Soul food in town. I mean the best. I mean licking your plate clean, licking your fingers off. It's Doolin's on Crenshaw. Doolin's on Crenshaw, just south of Stocker. This is exquisite. This is Southern cooking at its very best. Southern cooking is the essence of home cooking. It's the essence of comfort food. Their fried chicken is something to dream about. Try the oxtails, the short ribs, the macaroni and cheese. It's for all your catering needs, for all your dining needs. Doolin's on Crenshaw, just south of Stocker.
I'm Dr. Nazarian, the Beverly Hills dentist. My number is 310-277-8222.